Hi, I'm Kim Masters. Thanks for listening to The Business. Some of the most entertaining stories produced today aren't just on the big screen. They can be heard on KCRW's Unfictional. Intimate tales and artful documentaries crafted by some of the most talented radio producers across the globe. Check it out. You can find Unfictional on KCRW's iTunes page. From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
This is the most clear evidence of something built into the budget of a show that doesn't translate into what I would call good.
If you came up with a hit TV show, would you want your agent to make more money than you while your budget gets cut to pay for that? According to agent-turned-producer Gavin Pallone, that's exactly what can happen thanks to what's known as the package fee. This week, he and veteran TV writer-producer Rob Long explain how these fees work and why no one resists paying them. But first on the News Banter, from X-Files to Heroes Reborn, what's old is new again as the big broadcast networks roll out their fall schedules. Stay tuned, it's The Business from KCRW. I'm joined by my fellow banterer, Michael Schneider of TV Guide magazine. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Kim.
Michael, you're still in New York. I just left. We have both been in New York in the past several days for the big broadcast networks upfronts. They are presenting their fall schedules as usual, an old tradition that holds on, even though the model is sort of gradually disintegrating with accelerating speed, I should say. And I think we saw some big themes this year as the networks went one after another, one of which is what is old is new again.
Yeah, when you look at the schedules, the Muppets are coming back to ABC. The X-Files is returning for six episodes in mid-season on Fox. You have Heroes, now Reborn, on NBC. Even Coach, a little-remembered sitcom from the 90s, is coming back this time on NBC.
Yeah, let's just take a quick listen to the Muppets.
Excuse me, everybody, can I have your attention? I have some really great news. ABC wants to put on an all-new primetime series starring the Muppets.
Bless America and its magnificent broadcasting company.
Okay, so, and that was, of course, the Muppets. Also, you know, just generally, Mike, what we would call familiar IP, familiar intellectual property, things that people might recognize to break through the clutter, this increasing clutter. And, you know, it's not just online games anymore by any means. It's all of cable. And as we've talked about many times, you know, obviously, Netflix, Hulu jumping in with a vengeance, Amazon expanding all the time, Yahoo, programming, all originals. The networks are sort of looking for a way to say, you kind of know what this is, or maybe you heard of it before, or maybe you watched it back in the day. And they're bringing back ideas that are, as I said, familiar.
Right, exactly. Like you mentioned, IP like movie adaptations. Fox has Minority Report, a new take on the Steven Spielberg movie. CBS is doing a new version of Limitless, and it looks like Bradley Cooper is even going to show up for at least a couple of times. And then, of course, there are the superheroes. Once again, superheroes and comic book adaptations taking over primetime, even at CBS, which actually has its first one in a while in Supergirl.
Let's just take a listen.
My cousin, Kal-El, was sent to a planet called Earth. You may know his story, but you don't know mine.
On Earth, you will do extraordinary things.
Until now.
Okay, so Supergirl, as you say, on CBS. So yes, a lot of familiar property. And also, I was struck as we sat through these presentations by the power of certain showrunners. NBC certainly one among them. Dick Wolf, a veteran of veterans, going, you know, back to many Law & Order seasons, has now got 4 hours of that network's primetime schedule. He, of course, still has Law & Order SVU. And he had Chicago Fire that he launched. He launched Chicago PD and Chicago Medical. Over at ABC, Shonda Rhimes, I mean, the head of the network joked, they put up a visual in this presentation, which took place at the Lincoln Center. It was just a schedule with lots of little post-its saying, hold for Shonda Rhimes. She has a giant block on Thursday night. Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder, and a new one.
Yeah, it's called The Catch, and it joins, as you mentioned, those three other shows. So Shondaland, live and well at ABC. And then, of course, we mentioned those superhero shows, most of which, at least from the DC world, come from Greg Berlanti, who now has six shows on the fall schedule, believe it or not, including the new show Blindspot, which will air behind The Voice on NBC. But he also has all the DC shows, including Supergirl, and the return of even The Mysteries of Laura, a show that was on the bubble but is coming back to NBC.
Yeah, he's spread across a couple networks, primarily the CW, which is really doing so well, so much better with DC Comics than that Warner Brothers has been able to do on the film side.
Yeah, The Flash is their top-rated show of all time.
Meanwhile, Idol, Fox is saying goodbye to American Idol. It's the last season coming up, which is probably good since it just was really been winding down. It's been great, a great performer for them, but no more. They have Empire, luckily, now to have something good, and they were certainly capitalizing on that. They had the cast out singing and performing and bringing everybody out to dance at their presentation.
Yeah, I mean, Fox thankfully has Empire, and I'm still a little surprised that they were willing so quickly to announce the end of Idol. You know, normally when these shows are sort of on its last legs, they really drive them into the ground by doing celebrity editions or all-star editions or finding any way to squeeze every last drop of ratings point. And I think that is what they're going to try to do with this final season. But in talking to execs at Fox, you may see American Idol pop up again at some point. So never say goodbye to what was once by far the most powerful program in all of primetime.
It sounds like we may be seeing a little guest shot from Simon Cowell, too. They were certainly seemed to be hinting at that at their presentation.
Yeah.
Another highlight, Stephen Colbert showed up and charmed the audience at Carnegie Hall, where CBS made its presentation. Of course, he's poised to take over for David Letterman, who is going off the air, as we should note. And I did not attend that particular presentation, but it sounds like he was so charming. I like this line that he said he would fit right in at CBS, which has a lot of procedurals, you know, police shows. Most of my show will be me solving murders by zooming in on pubic hairs. I'm sure that got a big laugh in the room.
Well, Colbert was not only fantastic, he killed in the room, but even at the after party at CBS where he had to shake hands with advertisers, he stayed far beyond what he was actually allotted to. He wasn't ready to go. He was taking selfies with advertisers. He was by far the belle of the ball and one of the big highlights of all of Upfront Week this year.
On the other end of the spectrum, I think NBC. Now, poor NBC. I mean, NBC is actually bragging that it is, you know, the number one network, and it certainly is very heavily reliant on things like, oh, I don't know, having had the Super Bowl, having The Voice. They practically returned none of the new shows they picked up last year. And so they had to introduce such a big slew of new shows. So it always makes for a sort of a, you know, a lot of problems. First of all, a long and somewhat tedious presentation trying to show the advertisers clips from all these new shows and, you know, trying to launch new shows off of shows that are not hits.
Yeah, well, what's most astounding about NBC this year is they're bringing back one sitcom. Now, this was a network that you recall not too long ago was the home of must-see TV, Friends, Seinfeld, Frasier, you name it. They at one point had 18 sitcoms on the air in the 90s. Now they're down to one, and it's a show that not a lot of people have heard of called Undateable, which is, by the way, going to go live next year for every episode, which is an experiment in itself. But the fact that NBC only has one sitcom returning and will only have two sitcoms on its entire fall schedule is pretty astounding.
And I think we can agree, Mike, the probably the weirdest moment of the upfronts, the NBC is going to have 1 2-hour movie with Dolly Parton, a Coat of Many Colors, her story about herself. She came out and performed. Of course, we all love Dolly Parton. But Bob Greenblatt, the head of the network for now, and I will mention there are a lot of rumors at the upfronts about how long that will be the case, decided to sit himself down at Radio City Music Hall, where they did their presentation, and accompany Dolly on the piano as she sang "I Will Always Love You," which is, of course, a song she wrote.
Yeah, well, that was an upfront first for me. I haven't actually seen a network executive play piano on stage before at the upfronts. We've seen them dance before and do some other things, but that's one of the things I love about the upfront presentation. Sometimes the network presidents just go out there. They really hang themselves out there in order to sell their wares.
1 2-hour movie. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Kim.
That's Michael Schneider of TV Guide magazine.
Love you.
Gavin Pallone was an agent before becoming the producer of TV shows including The Gilmore Girls and Jane by Design, so he knows a few things about how the agency business works. Rarely shy about speaking his mind, Pallone recently wrote an essay in The Hollywood Reporter about the agency's longstanding practice of charging what is called package fees for almost every new show that gets on television. With a provocative headline, TV's Dirty Secret, Your Agent Gets Money for Nothing, the article explained how the fees work and argued that they're bad for everyone except the agents who collect them. Today we talk with Pallone, as well as Emmy-nominated writer-producer Rob Long, who concurs that few in his position understand why package fees can be bad for them and their shows. Long's credits include several seasons on the NBC hit show Cheers, and he's also the voice of the KCRW commentary, Martini Shot, which you can find at kcrw.com. Pallone kicked off our conversation by explaining how a writer might think package fees look like a good deal.
Traditionally, agencies collect 10% of their clients' income as their fee. And sometime in the 50s, the talent agencies got this idea that they could take a separate fee for putting things together. And I think it started with stage shows, actually, and then it sort of transitions its way into television and became this other thing. And that fee tends to be 3% of the license fee. I'm saying everything very slowly, like you're from another country or something
right.
like that.
Yeah, I'm from another.
3% of the license fee. The license fee is what the network pays
right.
the studio.
So and the network would pay that separate studio that mm-hmm. made the show,
right.
the licensing fee, and
exactly.
then 3% of that would be the packaging fee.
That's the packaging fee, and they collect that. They do not commission their clients when they collect the packaging
fee. So I
fee.
Say, Yahoo, I'm
their
not
clients.
Paying 10% to my agent because he is getting a packaging fee.
You probably would say Yahoo because you're unsophisticated.
That is
true. And you wouldn't understand actually what's going on.
Okay.
So that's how the agents try to sell it to the clients, that they get this separate fee. And since you're not paying commission, it's good for you. They get more than just the separate fee. They also get a deferred commission equal to that same commission over the life of the show, which comes out of profit. Now, not all shows make it to profit. Most shows don't make it to profit. But the ones that do, it's a lot of money when you start to think about 3% of the license fee. And those license fees escalate over time. If you're taking 3% of, say, a $2 million license fee, that's $60,000 times, you know, 180 episodes. It's a lot of money that comes out. And then on top of that, they also get 10% of the profits.
Which could be potentially
certainly eight, maybe even nine figures if it's CSI or some very popular show. Maybe a show like Scandal could even generate that kind of money. And those things do affect what the client gets, and they do affect what gets put on screen. This is the most clear evidence of something built into the budget of a show that doesn't translate into what I would call good.
Let me just clarify. If I think what you're saying is because of the money that is being drained to this package fee, the budget of the show will be adversely affected. So if you want to shoot on location in New York, it might be, no, you can't do it because this, I guess what you would characterize as a parasite is attached to the show.
Or something smaller. You know, as a producer, I can tell you over and over again, you're faced with choices that you have to make, be it secondary parts for actors, somebody who's more expensive and you have to go with somebody who is less expensive. Songs, music all the time. You'd like to get a song that might be a little bit more expensive or well-known, and you can't use that song. And many other things that, you know, could easily total up to somewhere between $30,000 and $60,000 an episode. So it's a lot of money.
Now, Rob, what is your experience in the wonderful world of packaging fees? Do you say, okay, I don't, yay? Are you like me? And you would say, yay, I don't have to pay my agent.
Well, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, here's the bad news. The bad news is that the Gavin's correct. And actually, the only thing I think he's not even telling you is that the package fee percentage of the license fee, as the license fee gets larger, so does that percentage. So, yeah, the agents do really, really well. The problem is that writers or, you know, writers, showrunners, the guy creating the show, he needs the money now. So someone's giving you a 10%, which you think is now a 10% bump, it's really a question of leverage. The guys creating and writing the show don't feel like they have that kind of leverage to actually turn to their agency and say, hey, I want to go only on commission. They just don't feel like they have that kind of power. And they probably don't have that kind of power because the system is kind of built around it.
I mean, what would the agent do to you if you said, I just would rather not pay the packaging fee and I would rather just have...
Well, I outlined that in
happened.
My article.
That has happened once.
It happened to me.
Yeah.
In
okay,
a sense.
Gavin,
it wasn't me, but I had brought in a writer to a project I had already sold. brought the writer to meet with the network. The whole thing was approved over a period of time, and I talk about this in the article. And then after it was sold, informed the agency. Now, again, going back in time, the idea was that the agency actually did something to earn this fee. Like they did something extraordinary, right. Not just happened to represent
something. As I understand it, the original concept is like the agency, like maybe you would come to them and say, I have an idea for a show. It's like a bunch of people in a bar and there's a cute bartender and a woman.
Or they came to you and said, hey, we have a book about people at a bar, Rob. Do you want to write it? We can give you the rights to the book. And an actress who also wants to be in it.
Yeah, we have talent. We can package the whole – the packaging was supposed to mean they helped put together the whole production package, including acting, writing, directing, everything that the network or the buyer wants.
Yeah. Now, the example that I'm giving, I come back to them. It's already sold. They did nothing. And they said, we want a package fee. So I resisted it in that situation. Then I said to their client, you got to go tell them to stop this. This is crazy.
Pushing.
So he
this.
Has to go back. And ask, you know, hey, it's blocking the deal because I wouldn't close the deal.
Right.
Can you just let this go? It's not really warranted. You didn't do anything. And they said no. And that's pretty shocking. And then I went back.
Shocking?
Yeah. And I think illegal possibly because there are certain rules about this.
Rob does not find this shocking.
Wait. Then I went to the network and I said, hey, guys, you can push this through. The client doesn't care about the package fee. All you need to do is say it's a take it or leave it deal. Go back to the agency. We've closed all of our terms. We're not paying a package fee. And it's over. And in success, you will save tens of millions of dollars because they're the ultimate payer.
Right.
Right? So, and they said, well, we don't want to do that because we would be afraid to alienate the agency.
Right. I mean, in the 90s, that's what built these companies, these big agencies. That's why that's that big shiny glass towers because these
packages are so huge. Oh, it continues to build. You know, the recent, and we don't have to, this is a whole sidetrack, but the recent exodus from CAA to UTA was in part.
This is the exodus of a group of, I think now 12 agents,
with 12.
Including the whole comedy team basically, and big stars.
Part of the path that was built for those people from CA to UTA was the cash that UTA has from having big package fees that have accumulated over the years. They paid those people a lot of money. They're also offered, I believe, to cut them into package fees that already existed at UTA before they got there. And that's what allowed them to make such a lucrative deal for the agents at CA and build their business. But one thing I wanted to mention was it's not only about like how the studios don't want to fight or push back on these package fees because they're afraid of losing a project. It's also something else. And I realized this when I was interviewing a couple different executives at different studios. And I said, hey, I'd love to be able to quote you anonymously. And one person said, well, let me think about that. I said, well, but you know, it's what you said is the truth. And he came back and said, no, you can't use it. And I think ultimately these executives are so afraid of the agencies because they all know at some point they're going to be out of a job. And when they're out of a job, they're going to not want to have an agency against them when they're trying to get another job at another studio.
Right.
So,
or they become producers and they're in that agency's office trying to get something going.
Or they want to be producers.
Yeah,
and so
good point.
It's as corrupt a thing as you can possibly have. This is a third world corruption level
but
thing.
But if you want to see something sad, give a showrunner or a writer an episodic budget and ask him to explain it. My colleagues, and I love them, don't understand where the money comes from and where it's going. So they look at a budget and they only look at one, that little corner of it that matters to them. So writers, I mean, when you're making these deals, you really have – a writer has two choices, right? I'll make a deal, but I'm going to fight about the back end. I'm going to fight for my back end points.
Right.
But, you know, the thing is the back end, I don't know. Does it really exist? Is it going to happen?
Right.
I'm going to go to war over – points that may be irrelevant. And so what most writers I know sort of settle on is, if you pay me a lot of money now, I will let you screw me in the back end.
Okay.
But I think that's actually true. That's actually the way it works.
Coming up after a short break, Pallone and Long tell us what, if anything, can be done to change the system and why they've advised writers not to fire their agents, no matter how difficult they are. You're listening to The Business from KCRW.
Are you thinking about buying a new car? Consider donating your old one to KCRW and support the unique mix of news, music, and culture you love. You'll become a KCRW member and get a nice tax write-off. For details, visit kcrw.com/cars.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Today, we're talking about what is wrong with TV package fees with writer and producer Rob Long and former agent Gavin Pallone, who's now a producer as well. In decades gone by, agencies were rewarded for bringing together different elements of a TV show, combining writers, producers, and actors on a project that they would take to a studio and a network. Today, agencies demand a package fee even if they had nothing to do with assembling those elements. Pallone argues that many writers don't grasp the impact of allowing their agents to collect those fees, and they're hardly alone in their ignorance.
I know today that I've had conversations with agents, and they don't really get it. By and large, I think they just something they ask for, they follow the party line and say, hey, it's good for you because you're not paying commission, and they believe it themselves without really even understanding where the money goes.
So when you were an agent, you would ask for packaging fees?
Yeah, and I would get them in deals. It just, I never had any actually turn into money.
Oh, because you were just not lucky, basically. Like you didn't get Friends or you Seinfeld.
You know, I think that's probably true. Maybe I wasn't lucky. Maybe over time, if I had not been fired from being an agent and have to go find something else to do.
A few times?
Twice. Only two times. Then maybe I would have gotten lucky and had that happen. But the point that I made in the article was I still made a lot of money as an agent.
So you didn't need those fees.
No, I didn't. I think it's always best, and it's best representation, if you align the interests of the representative and of the client.
We should probably clarify that you were not fired for anything having to do with being a bad agent.
I was fired for being a bad person.
Right.
So Rob, when you hear this, I mean, does it sound familiar to you? People pushing you into things you don't want to be in?
There was a little bit of that. You go through a portion of your career thinking that you work for your agent and that your agent is, you know, your boss. And that's always, always, always a mistake. But that's really the responsibility of the writers to know how this business really works.
Writers don't – a lot of them don't have that kind of brain.
True. But here's the problem. It's all – writers do things based on emotions. I mean, most people do, but especially writers. They're not rational. But the great and rational fear of every writer, no matter where you are really kind of on the list, is I don't want to be without an agent. It's very hard to get an agent when you don't have an agent. Your agent is like your direct pipeline to the actual commerce, to the business.
Right.
And so you don't want to lose that.
Material, deals, everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so it feels if you go up against your agent that what happens – you don't want your agent to hate you. To not like you. And agents are really great about throwing hissy fits and being super emotional. Agents are basically big babies. And so if you're the writer, you're like, well, I don't want to make him mad. If I make him mad, then maybe stuff won't happen.
Shot,
and I won't even
right.
know it's not happening, right? I won't even know. I mean, I've actually counseled writers. I mean, I have to be fully, completely honest. Told writers who wanted to fire their agent that this was probably not the time for them to do that in their career. Whether they know it or not, that gives the agent and the agency a huge amount of leverage because no writer wants to get kicked out of the agency.
I suspect they do know it. Gavin, you did that job.
Well, there's another thing. I give people that same advice. I haven't been an agent for 19 years, but people still come to me for the agent advice. And I almost always will say, I think you should go back and talk to them about it because for this one reason, the next guy is not going to be any better. And that's just the truth. It's a culture amongst agents – especially at the larger agencies, that allows them to do the same
thing.
That
things. If you push back, you'll get punished.
I think some writers, that's probably true. And that's how the story kind of ended up. I eventually went back to the writer again after HBO wouldn't – you know, I assumed HBO would want to defend their own – oh, did I just say HBO?
You did. I was wondering about that.
I assumed that HBO would want to defend their right to that tens of millions of dollars in success. And I went back to the writer and I said, this is your deal. They work for you. You have to demand that they close the deal based on the terms that – you know,
that you want, that you're happy with. Fee, right?
And he said, you know, I left another agency. I mean, I'm just not in a position to do that. And you know what? I had sympathy for him because I think he was right. I think that it would have really hurt him inside the agency if he had taken that position. Or maybe they would have even fired him. And then he had just left one agency, went to them. And now that's bad.
And this is another thing.
And this is that's a problem with the business, which is this accretion of agencies has left fewer choices for these clients, which has given greater power to the agents, given greater power for the agents to extract this corrupt bribe out of television shows and have more control over the clients.
So what is the advice? Let's say I am this young writer who doesn't understand this at all, and I come to you and say, well, they just want to do this to me, like the deal you had, Gavin. It's all set up. They didn't do anything. All they want to do is collect now, you know, skim off of my thing. You're going to tell this person they have to just take it. right?
This is a fight for possibly the few very successful people who have a tremendous amount of leverage. I think that the higher-ups at the large corporations should actually either bring in an outside consultant or put together a team and really look at how much money they've paid out in these package fees and back ends over the years. You go look at a company like Warner Brothers, and you look at all the CSIs and whatever, you know, however many shows that they have on the air, and what's and then you can go ahead and prorate it year to year. How much money do they pay out in profits and direct fees? And when they see how that affects the bottom line, it would be up to them. I mean, the fact is, no agency can say, we're not doing business with Warner Brothers anymore, because that would cause exodus, for sure. And but Warner Brothers has all the power. Really, the studios have the power. And it should be up to them, because they're the ones who are hurt most.
Rob, you agree?
Yeah, I do agree. And it's very weird. It's not an economic model that makes sense according to economic models. The guy who has the most money is usually the person who has the most leverage. And in that case, it's the studio. And the studio, for some reason, nickels and dimes the writers. So they squeeze down on the fees, which they've been doing really since the writer's strike. Very, very tough deals on the fees they'll pay a writer. And they have this lax attitude about these other fees they paid the agency, whereas instead what they should be doing is they should be squeezing at the agency and raising the fees. So Warner Brothers should be known as, we pay a lot of money for a script or a lot of money for an episodic fee, and we take that money, we get that cash because we don't give the agencies these sweetheart deals. If they did that, they would kind of have a direct relationship with the writer or the show or the creator, which I think would actually really help. It kind of rebalance the power a little bit.
Of course, the agents have their own issues now, because the star salaries are being squeezed. Everybody's being squeezed. We're in a changing environment. Let me just, before we talk about that, is there ever a time when the agency would deserve a packaging fee?
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. I mean, I guess there's a theory. Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, if they put together, if they have represent a bunch of elements. And,
but if they represent a bunch of elements, they're getting 10% times the bunch of elements.
Yes.
I mean, what's wrong with that?
Nothing wrong with that. So let's bring it back to the writer. The world changes. The agent is still trying to figure out how to survive, because it's been tough for them too, as
for
we've
the
seen. Yeah, they're dealing with, God, you know, there aren't that many stars that get $20 million anymore for a movie. You know, it's tough out there for them.
It's going to get harder for the agents, because how do you get more free cash flow into the business? And here's the answer. You have to turn the screws on the junior agents and, in a sense, the clients too. You have to push harder to get those kind of high return activities like packaging fees. And you probably have to pay less to the more junior agents,
right.
The bulk of the expense of the agencies is the agents.
Right.
So the younger people who are coming up, you have to get a better return on them. And the ways that you can do that is by cutting people and having fewer people doing more of the work, and also just not enriching them in the way that when I was a young agent, you know, the young people were, you know, being enriched by the older people who did not have that perspective at that period of time of, like, how are we going to sell this thing so I can take a big lump of money and not have to pick up somebody's
Everybody
phone call.
Everybody got rich in those days. Yeah. Yes. So the young writer today, the message, the takeaway here is there's hope, but you're probably going to get kind of screwed.
Look, I the only advice I give to writers that I give, no matter what they say to me, is you keep writing. Like, your only leverage you have is your material. And it's not about this project, it's about the next project. And so you got to be thinking long term, and you always have to be writing. And you always have to be coming up with stuff. That's the only thing you've got. And that's the way you build up leverage, and that's the way you build up the choice, right? You know, what's the power we all have? The power of the alternative. It's the power to say no. If you can't say no, you are not in charge.
Rob Long and Gavin Pallone, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
Thank you for having me.
Is that what I'm supposed to say?
Yes, that's what
I'm
supposed
sure.
to say.
I wasn't sure.
And that's The Business. Caitlin Parker produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. You can hear The Business on demand with the KCRW smartphone app and get the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.